Welcome to Dragon Radio's program. I'm Liz Bobo, and I have as my guest today Colleen Morris, who is the leader of the Howard County Teachers Association. She's the president of HCEA, and I interviewed her. She was one of my first interviewees when I started doing this program. She came on in her position at just about the same time that Dr. Martirano, the superintendent of schools, came on. And it's been a very busy few years with a lot of very good accomplishments, some issues to deal with too, but they've been good, smooth years. And then, as with people in every other walk of life on this planet, the coronavirus came along, and it is changing so many things. Some people think that because Howard County is one of the wealthiest counties in the country, that we don't have any problems with fully funding education, but that's not so. And Howard County now has a much more diverse economic population than we used to have. We have some poverty here in the county, and it's very important to a lot of us. I still remember Jim Rouse, the founder of Columbia, which is a big part of Howard County, his deep, deep devotion to lower income people and to making them a part of the whole community. So our Howard County school system is blessed with very good teachers, a good superintendent, and yet this time that we're in right now is so new for all of us. And how to deal with it, how to plan for when to reopen, how to plan taking care of the kids when they are worked up and excited and frightened. So I'm very happy to have you here today, Colleen, and I'm looking forward to hearing your plans and what it's like doing your job now as distinguished from it was when I interviewed you 3 years ago. So welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You look very calm and composed, like you always do. But we've had several conversations in the last few weeks, and I now have a better feel for just what it is you're dealing with and trying to make this all work smoothly and effectively for the students first, but then also for the families and for the teachers. This has to be a difficult time for teachers. So tell us what your priorities are now and how things have changed.
Well, I mean, we've always had some issues that we've been dealing with in Howard County when it comes to equity. So obviously the virus didn't cause that, but it has exacerbated it. We can see that so much more clearly now. And what people need and what people want, it runs the gamut. I know that when we were first closing back on March 13th, some of the things that we were most concerned about was food and medicine. Some of our students that they get their meals only from school, or they have medication in the schools. And so that was obviously our first priority. We didn't know how long we were going to be closed for at that point. We didn't understand the whole breadth of the situation. So we definitely, that was one of the first things that we were planning for. And then of course, when that closure extended, how are we going to move to an online platform? How do you take a totally in-person teaching experience and move that to a platform? What are the schedules going to look like? You know, we know we have families that have multiple students in one household. How is that going to work? What is everyone's job responsibilities going to be? How are we even going to get devices to everyone? Because we were so far away from a 1-to-1 ratio in Howard County. We were more like a 1-to-4 ratio. And that was, of course, with our computers in the schools. And so how do you take a workforce that we've been cutting for years and have them deploy all these computers that we don't even know if they all work and they all have to be wiped down? So all of that, all of the logistics of that were things that we were definitely going through and trying to develop schedules and how that would work. So obviously that happened in March, and our system, we are very lucky that we work very well with our system. So our union, which does represent all educational employees, certificated and non-certificated, that's 7,200 people out of the 8,500 that work for the system are in our units. And so It's a lot. And you know, you think it's hard in central office when you could just go to central office and have a meeting with a whole bunch of people, but now you have to be online with everyone. So everyone's in their separate spaces making decisions. It's just not easy.
I was going to say I can imagine, but I know I really can't. I really can't. I've never been working in an environment, in a situation like that.
I think all the, you know, people are like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And everyone is working so hard just to try to get the best result. And of course, our plans for this coming fall are going to be a lot different than our plans were in the spring. People wanted more synchronous teaching, and we obviously wanted to be with our students more, but that is going to happen in the fall. And then you have the other end of that, the other side of that, as to we have all these parents that are working and our educators that are working. How do you do your job if you're still lucky enough to have your job? Because, you know, before the pandemic hit, unemployment in Howard County was below 3%. At the end of the school year, it was above 21%. So if you're lucky enough to still have your job and you're working virtually, how do you help your students with an all-day virtual schedule while you're also working virtually? So we're in the midst of all of that right now.
That's a lot. You've got a lot. Lot on you, but I know you're a runner. And when we talked a couple of times in preparation for this taping that we're doing today, this recording that we're doing today, I think every time you ended with, okay, I'm going to go out for a quick run and then I'll get back to you. So those quick runs are helping you deal with all of this, huh?
Yeah, I think that everyone needs to have, you know, a stress release just to clear your mind and be able to get back to a place where you are able to look at this in a, it's unprecedented. What we're dealing with is unprecedented. And be able to give everyone grace, because as we were talking about earlier, not everyone is their best self right now because we're all in this situation of uncertainty. And then be able to think everyone's doing the best they can and being giving that grace. And I hope that the listeners, when they hear this, think about that, because I've seen some real ugly behind the screen. I call it mean behind the screen. With social media. So
about what? Schools? About
Right now we're working on how do we get back into serving all of our population, but definitely our most vulnerable population, where we know that virtual learning is not a replacement for in-person learning for anyone. But there are certain services that, you know, we just can't provide online that students need. So that's my son.
I can see a very devoted son delivering something to his mom.
He is, yeah, at work. Because I am in the office. I do come in every other day. But with that, how do we make that happen? How do we make sure that we are putting health and safety at the center of everything for our students, our families, and for our educators, and then also allow for in-person learning? And we are working on that now, or even asynchronous, because we know that our schedule is synchronous, but we also have demands on us to provide asynchronous, because what if children can't access that? Everyone knows that Maryland is a two-party state. When we started this actual interview, you have to agree to be recorded, and that's really hard. We're going to be going back into communities and classes where at least last year we knew our students for three quarters of the year, and the students knew each other in the classroom. This year, they're going to be meeting online and learning, you know, everyone and getting to know them. And so it's just very different. And we're going to need as many resources as we can get. So some people have said, well, what if we have populations that can't wear a mask? Well, we know that we have populations in hospitals that can't wear a mask. So we have to give the people that are interacting with them as much protective gear as we can. Well, that's going to cost money. We know that in a brick and mortar setting, I taught at Guilford Elementary School. I'm sure I'm not the only school, but we didn't even have enough soap for the whole school year in the bathrooms. And so now we're going to have hand sanitizer stations everywhere. You know, it's a lot. It's a lot to think about. I think that our leaders are doing the best that they can to try to accommodate and get us to a point where we can go back, at least in small groups. But then we also have to remember, if we have educators that are leading small groups in the classroom, they can't lead online too, because that's two separate jobs. And as you know, you hinted to earlier, we have in Howard County been blessed, but we also were blessed because we're a small county and we don't always see all the problems that other counties have, but we do have them. We do have a lot of problems in our county, and we've been cutting back on staff. just last year, we cut a lot of our resources in math and reading support and technology. 74 paraeducator positions were cut. We have not been keeping up with special ed. We needed, at the beginning of this year, an additional 300 positions in special ed just to get us to the place where we needed to be, and we only got 107 of them. So how do you do that? How do you continually provide and provide everything that everyone needs when your funding is continually being cut? I mean, I know we were talking about this earlier with the federal government giving money to make our airlines safe. Well, that's great. But it would be better if we could make our schools as safe. I mean, even with the, just recently when the governor was suggesting that we cut funding for public education, that's crazy. And, you know, our federal government right now saying that in the spring, they were giving meals to everyone that needed them. But now you're going to actually have to apply in the fall. And so that meal production is going to be cut off a lot. We know that in Howard County, before June ended, we had totally spent through our food budget and we had spent the $2 million that was our fund balance. And that was before we even ended. And so when the federal government says they're going to give us $2 million to tutor, that's great. But you need to multiply that by like 100.
And even then, you won't be completely there. You know, knowing we are one of the wealthiest counties, it's so easy to, and I know many of my friends, you know, my age, whose kids are not only out of college, but now our grandkids are graduating college, really have not kept up with the additional need, with the changes in the way teaching is done, the way schools are operated, and with the change in the population here in Howard County. We are not rolling in money to take care of these kids. I want to ask you something, Colleen, the word you use over and over, and I'm not sure how I would define it. Synchronous learning. What is synchronous learning?
So we talk about, like right now, we're on synchronously. So we're in real time talking to each other synchronously, as opposed to asynchronous. If other people will be accessing this video asynchronously, they could access it whenever they want. So for synchronous learning, that's, I would be a teacher right in front of you. I would have a blackboard. You could ask me questions about what was going on. But if you took that video and you did it asynchronously, you'd be able to see what was going on, but you wouldn't be able to interact. That's the way I describe it.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good description. So what do you think are the major, I'm not going to say obstacles, but what other decisions, what other plans have to be made before the school system, the teachers will be ready to go with however many kids come in?
Are you talking about in person?
Yes. Don't even bother asking?
No, I mean, there's just so many things that people, if you really want to get a really good picture of it, if you watch the first board meeting that we had where the board decided to go virtual for the first semester, Jen Mallow does a really good job breaking down, and so does Vicky Catronio, breaking down the different things that we need. For instance, we know what the CDC is saying and how many people can be in a group, right? But we don't know how many desks 6 feet apart could fit in all the classrooms. So we have a general idea, but we don't have a very specific idea. When you talk about transportation, only one child can be at a seat, but are you going to do that every other seat? Are you going to have them sit at every other seat, or are you going to have one child every seat? And I mean, we right now have children sitting on the floor on buses, on bus rides. So three in a seat and some on the floor. So just getting them there, then if we could get them there, we need to talk about like, what does that look like in order so that we don't have sick people coming into our building? What does our protocol look like for that? And then if someone does get sick, what is our testing? What does our contact tracing look like? And then we can actually get into the classroom. And once we're in the classroom and we're all separated, and they're children, they're just children. They're not used to this. They're not, you know, I have a 2-year-old that I interact with, and that 2-year-old does not like it when I have a mask on my face. I've had children that if I have a Band-Aid on, or this is going to bring you back when I used to wear pantyhose to school, right? That's going to bring you back.
I think I can remember that far back. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, kids, they can't stop touching, right? They have to touch you. It's just, they're children. So So just making sure that you follow those protocols and you do that. And then what are you going to do when they have to go to the bathroom? That's a big concern for me. What are we going to do with the bathroom? You know, what are we going to do about eating in school? Where we do half day, where we do whole day. Right now, there are people in the school building doing testing. So some of our psychologists are doing testing with students one-on-one. They have a great protocol set up. I've seen that. Everything seems to be going really well with that. I know that Park and Rec, they have 9 sites in our building right now for that they're using for daycare, all day daycare. Those groups are in between, I think, 2 to 11 students because not as many people signed up. And again, we'd have to find out from families because I've heard students be concerned, not that they are unhealthy themselves, but if they have family members that are vulnerable, bringing it back to their family members, what would that feel like? I mean, the mental aspect of this, not just the social isolation and not being able to interact, but just the mental health of our students when we don't have enough counselors to start with. And our ratio at elementary school is like 1 to 500. It's really, really difficult.
Wow. Mm-hmm. 1 to 500. How are any teachers saying, I don't want to handle this, I can't handle this?
So I guess we're talking about both synchronous virtual and also coming back to school.
Yes.
We did send out a survey. 3,300 of our members replied to it, which is a little over half. We only had it out for 3 days. So 3,300 is a really good return.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, but out of that, about 700 of them said they would be willing to come back and do small groups. A little over 500 of them are elementary. But of course, it also, they are concerned about PPE and keeping safe too. So they're willing to do those things. It's just about keeping safe. Some of our members are their parents too. 47% of those surveyed had small children at home. And so the schedule that we have is demanding. They will be synchronously, like us right now, online for about 5 hours a day.
Well, that's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time. And so in those 5 hours, some of it's teaching, some of it's providing extra support, some of it's in meetings. What are they going to do with their young children? And then if they all take family, they can take child rearing leave, they can take FMLA, they can take the CARES Act FMLA. They could do it in hourly increments. What are we going to do about substitutes? So there's a lot, I mean, there's just a lot to think about. And so the more help that we can get for support, that would be great. It would be really great if the Congress and our local government said, hey, we hear you, we need to help you, and we're going to. I know we were waiting for, I mean, just before we even went into this area, this arena where you see all the needs that we have, we had all these needs before. If we had more community schools, if we had more counselors, if we had more support for our students, which is what we were trying to get through the blueprint. And then of course, our General Assembly passes a blueprint and then our governor vetoes it. So we're waiting for our General Assembly to get back and pass that blueprint. Of course, there are tripwires in it because we also know that our sales tax is down and the unemployment all over is down as well. So it's definitely a challenge.
It is a challenge. It really is a huge challenge. And I really admire you, and I'm grateful to you for being willing to hang in there and take it on. Are there any other unexpected consequences of this coronavirus that may be beginning to, you know, show their heads in any way? Or do we pretty much have the whole picture now?
I don't think we do. I mean, I think we learn things all the time. I think when we first shut down, I know I was leaving my shoes outside, right? I was leaving my mail outside. If you remember, we were doing the count, the census, right? And I was talking to Dr. Ball about having paper flyers at the food sites for the census. And we decided we shouldn't do that because of everyone was saying, oh, the paper is going to carry the virus, which I'm sure is probably still true, but not to the extent that we thought it was at that point. Now we know it's more airborne. So now people are looking at HVAC systems and how we can scrub air through HVAC systems. So I think we're continually learning. I mean, I've heard that people are trying out vaccines, and then people say, okay, well, I mean, I have educators that say, well, maybe we'll get a vaccine. And that would be great if we get a vaccine. And we need to think about all the needles that we need to administer that vaccine. Who's going to vaccinate all the people? So there's just all these things that...
Endless list. And
it's
endless.
An endless list. And I think that, I mean, we only know what we experience, right? So we know some things that happened in the fall that we need to improve on as we go forward with education. But I think as we get into the fall with our new schedule, we're going to find new things too. I don't know how the bandwidth of all these internet providers are going to sustain having five devices on synchronously in your household all day long is going to work. Just things like that. I mean, we can look at other places to see what they've been doing and how they've been doing it. But of course, it all comes down to funding and making sure everyone has. We are going to have one-to-one devices, though. We will be reaching the one-to-one ratio. Now, of course, it will be phased in because the manufacturers have to provide the devices, but at least we have the money now to make sure everyone has the one-to-one devices.
What is your biggest concern about where this might lead?
I have so many. I think the biggest concern I have is the mental health of our employees, our families, our students. You know, we've been saying that loss of learning can be recovered, and we'll have to figure out how to do that. It's going to look different, I think, than a normal school year when we finally get back, but loss of life cannot. And so I don't know how many people you've been in contact with that have lost loved ones from COVID, but I can tell you our members have lost family from COVID. And I just coping with that and coping with where we are right now. And we have families, and this will still happen, where the siblings have to take care of each other because the parents might both be sick. So even if you don't die from this and you get very sick, we did have that, you know, I was acutely aware of that happening. We have families where both parents have lost their jobs. Sometimes it's only the high school students that have jobs for that family. So I know we haven't seen the evictions happen yet because of the laws that were put in place, but they're all about to expire. And so what's going to happen when that happens? And I just hope that that's my biggest fear. And then working as a community, I think when this first happened, there were so many people that were willing to help and work as a community to get people's basic needs met. And I just hope that continues because I don't think we've seen the height of the need yet.
We also don't have the same level of newspaper reporting that we used to have. And I'm thinking it's real, I'm sitting here in the back of my mind playing what I want to do to get the word out to people my age who have lived here in the county for a long time. And it's been such a magnificent place to live, really is. It's also a great place to live as you age. But we need to be aware, those of us, I mean, our kids are grown, as you heard me say, my grandkids are off to college, and it's really going to be extremely important that we're aware of what others in our community know more than the teachers and the parents and the school children. We need to all be prepared to do whatever we can to help. And I don't know if you have any suggestions at this point, probably not. But I think of, well, what you've taken on as a teacher. I've had such admiration for teachers all my life, and I really, truly have. I have a sister who was a teacher. She was a great teacher, and a math teacher, 12 years older than I, and she's no longer living. But it's going to be just crucial that we push the level of the importance of teachers up even higher than it is in our community. And I'm not saying that to you to make you feel good. It's because we can't afford to have a lot of defections, you know, not even thinking in terms of respect for the teachers and support for the teachers. But we desperately need you all just to stay on and loving your jobs and doing your jobs.
Yeah, I think that we've had obviously a decline in the teacher and educator population, just with people not going into that field because of all the challenges and demands. But to go back to what you said about like people knowing what the need is, I think the Harrah County government, they have a co-ed group that if anybody needs anything, you can go onto that website and you can let them know what your needs are. But it's also really important, what we found was really important, is getting things out in different languages too. And just making sure people are aware of where they could go for help and where they can go for resources. If anyone is facing eviction, Caroline Walker is the support person at Central Office that we've been trying to figure out. We know this is coming. We know it's coming because we can see it. But we need to get people in, we need to connect people with those resources. And I think that's the biggest thing, is making that connection.
Are you looking forward to getting back in the classroom?
Oh my gosh, yes.
You are. You love it, don't you?
I can't wait. I can't wait. I have to tell you, I thought I worked hard before. I work so much harder now because people are like, oh, she doesn't need time to go, you know, to move from meeting to meeting. We'll just start scheduling her. So. Yes. And it's so much harder, you know, trying to get things done. It's just so much more work. I know our educators feel that way about lessons. They want to be in the classroom. They get so much from your face, right? And just knowing what you know and having that exchange, they are dying to come back, but they will not die if we allow them to come back. So that's not going to happen. I really didn't mean to say it that way, but they miss their students. They miss seeing them. They miss interacting with them. They want to be with them, but we also need to make sure that they're safe.
That's for sure. That's for sure. What else would you like to tell us? What else would you like me to ask? It's so big.
It's so big. And I know we only have a couple of minutes. So I would just really appreciate it if anyone listening to this podcast gives people grace in their lives. And that's not just extended to my field and the educators, but anyone, because everyone's going through their own thing right now. And so I just think giving people grace and knowing that everyone's doing the best that they can would really be helpful.
That's a beautiful word to choose. We don't use that word that often in our culture, do we?
Not enough about
having grace or giving grace or practicing grace. And one thing that this coronavirus has provided, I think, is more time for just about all of us. Not so much for me, because I am retired and I am, you know, in control of my time. Very little do I have to show up in a certain place at a certain time. But I certainly hope, and I think I'm seeing this in my communication with people, that we are more aware of the fact that everyone has their coronavirus story. You know, everyone has some experience that they're having that is different from what their life used to be like. Possibly it's not painful, possibly it's not frightening, but it's just created for me such an awareness that everything changes, you know, constant change. And I had not thought of approaching it from the perspective of the word grace, like you just suggested. And I want to tell you that I, for one, I'm going to remember that word. And I'm serious, I'm very serious to give people grace, whether it's the superintendent of schools or someone teaching kindergarten or someone cleaning in one of the schools. That we can all use grace right now.
We're all in this together.
Yeah, we really are. And it's a great, you know, that saying, I don't know what words are used, another damn growth opportunity. You know, we don't need another growth opportunity. And we do, we always need more growth opportunities. But this one is just so beyond what I think any of us had anticipated would happen in our lives. And here we are, and it is an opportunity to do good as well as pull through. So
totally agree.
I know you do. I know you do. You're like a soulmate to me. So
thank you. Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. This has been, I wasn't sure just what I wanted to talk with Colleen about today. But watching her, watching the expression on her face, knowing how deeply she loves the work that she's doing and loves the students and loves the teachers. And the thought has occurred to me in talking with her that what if every one of us would pay more attention to the opportunities we have in our lives every day, not just in the midst of the coronavirus, to do more good in the world, and to speak out against kinds of discrimination. And I'm very hopeful that that's what's going to come out of this, that we'll not just make it through, but that we'll come through stronger, we'll come through with more compassion, we'll come through with more respect for one another. And I am grateful that the community college plays such a big role in that here in our community of Tally County.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into...